The roots of racism run deep in American culture and institutions, but so does the desire to do something about it. For this week's Friday Forum on WNIJ, we bring you the second part of our interview with Northern Illinois University education professor Joseph Flynn. He's the author of White Fatigue, Rethinking Resistance for Social Justice, which explores how education can get more people engaged in the fight for equality. I'm Susan Stevens. So there was this song about 5 years ago. Maybe you remember it. Country singer Brad Paisley and rapper LL Cool J faced off about race, the Confederate flag, do-rags, cowboy hats, and accepting each other's culture. It was called Accidental Racist. I'm proud of where if you don't judge my gold chain, not everything we've done, I'll forget the iron chain. It ain't like you and me can rewrite history. Can't rewrite history, baby. Author Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote, Accidental Racist is actually just racist. But NIU professor Joseph Flynn cut Paisley some slack, saying it was a brave thing to do for a popular country singer, inviting harsh criticism from both sides of the political spectrum.
There was a hard backlash to Brad when the song came out, and a lot of dismissive comments. But I would say we got to give him full marks for trying, especially in the context of country music in Nashville. And if the song was meant to open a conversation, I think there are other things that he could have said. And I think that some of the statements like LL's line that, you know, the Mason-Dixon needs some fixing and stuff like that, you know, it's fine as a song, but it opens this door and then leaves the door unattended, you know. So a lot of people could walk into the song, hear it, and feel validated in what Mr. Paisley was saying, but then not pick it up, you know, not investigate any further. And I make a similar critique against President Obama and his 2008 Philadelphia address, where he talks about race, and in that speech, what I had been hoping for the entire speech is, look, we keep saying these things happened, these instances of racism happened, but you're not giving people a firm example that they can chew on. Tell people what are real, true blue instances of racism historically and currently that people can then think about more deeply. President Obama's speech was a wonderful speech and highly powerful. He still kind of just punted and didn't really take it in for, you know, the proverbial touchdown. And I would have liked to have seen that. I think if we're not starting to, especially our civic leaders, aren't laying these cases out and showing people, it's like, look, part of the reason why the wealth gap persists between African Americans and white Americans is because of housing practices from the 1930s well into the 1980s, if not even until today, you know, with the mortgage crisis of 2009 and the disproportionate rate at which African Americans, Latinos were extended some prime loans, you know, that's a problem. You know, and we can point to that and we can show people that. It's like, so what do you think of fairness here? You know, what do you, and how do you think that that had an impact? So I think what Mr. Paisley did was a great introduction and a really important move. And I think more artists ought to do something like that. Kanye. but more is needed. You know, more questions need to be put onto the table rather than just declarative statements about being frustrated with a conversation about race. Let's think about, well, why is the race a conversation about race so frustrating in the first place?
Well, what is a white person's role in any movement when it takes on, means taking on the issue of race? Support? Can you be a leader?
I do believe, and I talk in the book about the notion of allies, accomplices, and leaders. And oftentimes we talk about white folks as just being allies. And there's a lot of problems to allyship. allies don't have to get into the fight. Allies can just stand on the sidelines and say, hey, yeah, I support you, mm-hmm. you know, as the parade marches by. But doesn't have to get involved, right? Accomplices, on the other hand, they recognize that this is a system of advantage, and they, as along with everyone else, has a vested interest in changing how we function racially. And so the accomplice isn't just standing by the sideline. The accomplice is right there, knee deep in the fight, and recognizes that white folks do have an important position to take in ameliorating racist practices. And then leaders, of course, a smaller subset of accomplices, but I think any person can be a leader, depending on, most importantly, what their ultimate motive is. You know, are you truly invested in changing race and dismantling systems of racial oppression? Are you really truly invested in that? And if you are, whether you're a lawyer or a student council president at a high school, you can be a part of that fight. And I'm of the opinion that you ought to be a part of that fight.
I think people want shortcuts to this. How do you get around that?
Yeah, the shortcut. People want shortcuts because they want to feel like something's been accomplished. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why there's so much reference to the 60s. Well, we did this in the 60s. We did this in the 60s. Well, yeah, we did do that, but there were still problems. Like the day after the signing of, you know, the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, et cetera. So in that desire to see something done, you know, we miss that there is knowledge that has to be built before you can do that. If you wanna know what to do, you know, if people feel like they wanna do something, well, watch the documentary 13th on Netflix and watch it with your family and have a conversation about it. If you want to do something, get involved with organizations, you know, meet people. Do your own Google search about what microaggressions are and the history of microaggressions. It's not a new phenomenon thought up by a bunch of liberals to, you know, have something to complain about. It's a psychological idea that's been around since the 70s and explains a lot of what happens in our daily practices that don't necessarily always get registered as being racist or being problematic. But sometimes, you know, we're all individuals and we're, you know, so if you say something to me that you might think is just a joke, it might not receive that way to me. And if I tell you that it doesn't, rather than trying to argue with me and telling me how I should feel about what you just said, why not just say, you know, Joe, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean for that to be offensive. And then maybe we can have a conversation about why you ought not say something that way to other people. You know, we need to stop rushing toward a shortcut to deal with a problem that's been around for 400 years and maybe walk toward understanding and compromise and, you know, kind of suspend our own self-righteousness and not to be offensive to anybody, but our own arrogance to think that just because we experience the world a certain way, everybody else either does or should. You know, I'm not you. And I don't have the same history as you. I'm a completely different person. But, you know, you expect me to recognize that about you. Why not recognize that about me?